What do you throw away? Do you think about it? Do you care? This hour, we trace our trash to its final resting places. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, we're kicking off our summer environmental series by talking trash. We'll go along with refuse collector Tim Burns to discover the dirty little secrets left by the curbside. Also, DNR environmental engineer Mike Smith on our landfills. Then Gary Friel of Ames and Craig Stewart Paul of Marion about two different ways that waste can generate energy. We also want to hear from you this hour. In five words or less, how has your attitude toward trash changed? We get started right after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we're kicking off our environmental series on Talk of Iowa and River to River. Perhaps you heard Talk of Iowa at 10 o'clock, talk about recycling for the hour. And this hour, our entire series is called Ripple Effects, Exploring Iowa's Environmental Challenges. This month, on Mondays, we're examining some of our most pressing environmental issues here in Iowa. We're also taking a look at what we do in Iowa to impact the environment and what we can do better to be better stewards. Well, what do you throw away? Do you think about it? Do you care? We hope to make you care a little bit more about your trash this hour as we trace our trash to its final resting places. Later in the hour, we'll look at a couple of ways that refuse is being used to produce energy in the state. In just a moment, the state of our landfills. But first, let's start, of course, at the curbside, where we say goodbye to our household trash. Producer Lindsay Moon went out with Tim Burns, who's been collecting refuse for Iowa City Solid Waste for the past 25 years. On a typical day, he takes about 5 hours to collect trash from around 650 homes. He drives one of these newer generation collection trucks, one of those with a mechanical arm that extends to pick up and dump the bins. This while Tim operates that from the cab. But it hasn't always been that way. Before these trucks, Tim Burns spent 16 years lifting that waste manually, heaving trash cans up and dumping them into the old-style trucks, cans weighing up to 70 pounds apiece. Imagine that, 600 cans per day, 5 days per week.
All the guys call me the master because I'm fast, I'm good at it and stuff, so I kind of got a title of, they call me the master. So... started out farming, and then back in the early 80s, and then started getting as a manual picker at first, and picked for quite a while, and I got a buddy down here that was in the garbage part, and I liked it ever since. You know, the elements is the worst. You got hot days, you get really cold days, and the garbage, there's a lot of garbage that trash gets stuck in the cans and stuff, and you got to really hit them out and get that out. That was always a hard job. And then and the other is just dealing with the rain and all the snow and ice and all that. That makes it really hard there. This is one of the jobs that has to be done. Can't just put it off for tomorrow. Each route's got to be done each day. There's times I've pulled out steel posts. We'll get, every once in a while, if a rabbit gets ran over and you can smell that, they'll pick it up, throw it in the garbage, and I've had a skunk that somebody bagged up and put in the garbage, and that got pretty bad there and stuff, so it's like, you don't expect it, and it's like, wow, they sneak stuff in here. There's some people that sneak stuff in the garbage. It's easier that way, so they'd rather do it that way, but, I encourage people, I wish it would recycle a lot more.
Producer Lindsay Moon with that audio postcard from her ride along with Tim Burns, who collects refuse for Iowa City's Solid Waste Division. We also want to hear from you this hour. We want to hear from you in five words or less how your attitude toward trash has changed over the years. Five words or less, how has your attitude towards trash changed? We'll be creative and accurate in monitoring or communicating that change to us. You can do that via email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. 5 words or less, how has your attitude towards trash changed over the years? Well, where does our trash go once it leaves our curbsides? Mostly to landfills. Joining me now to talk about our landfill situation, Mike Smith is in our Des Moines studio, environmental engineer with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Hello, Mike.
Hello. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing fine. You've been with the DNR, I understand, for 3 years. You used to be a landfill consultant before that and have been working in Iowa since the 1990s. So give us some perspective here. How long have we been putting trash in landfills?
Well, we've been putting trash in landfills many years before they became regulated. They didn't become regulated until the late 70s, and our regulations have gone through several changes over the course of that time. Probably every town and small community in Iowa at one time had an area where they dumped their trash. And many of those are actually not even known where they're at. So
prior to the 70s, before regulation, you just had a community say, hey, Joe Smith on the outside of land says he's got some land and we can just make that into a dump or the city can buy it. And no state was involved, no regulations?
That's correct.
Okay. So this 1970s, we have some regulation. Have we been tracking how many landfills are in the state, for instance?
Well, when we instituted the more modern permitting system, we had about 100 landfills that were permitted in the state, practically one for every of the 99 counties. Right now, we're down to about 42 landfills, and there's been some regionalization that's gone on over time. And nationally, we're probably a little bit, I would say, behind the national curve, and nationally, for every 100 landfills, there are probably now only 10.
Okay. So we have 40-some operating. I understand there are 50 or so landfills closed. Why does a landfill get closed?
You know, most of it is related to economics and the economics of scale. The larger landfills have to pay for some of the same services that the smaller landfills do, but those costs don't go up proportionally with the size of the landfill. So there's some economics, scale of economics, so to speak, and it becomes a little bit more, it becomes much more cost effective to go to the larger landfills.
Mm-hmm. Our landfills are aging. What happens, what problems happen when our landfills get old?
Well, first of all, as you throw away trash, especially the organic fraction of the trash, it starts to decompose. And over time, it really becomes a little bit more safer, a little more benign over time. So as it decomposes, it will generate some methane and some CO2. The other problems, I guess, is that rainfall that falls on the landfill is going to create leachate, the water percolates through the waste, and then that leachate can carry with it contaminants that can contaminate our groundwater.
Mm-hmm. So the leachate happens. Do all of our landfills, whether they're operating now or the closed ones, do they have liners to prevent that leachate from going places it shouldn't?
The active landfills now, the 42 or so that are still operating, have lined cells that also have a drainage layer in them with piping that collects this leachate and treats it as wastewater. Mm-hmm. So the older landfills, and I would say most of the landfills that have closed, do not have landfill liners, much less a leachate collection system.
Do not have liners.
They do not.
So whatever is in the landfill gets rained on. That rain kind of runs through it, collects who knows what, and it goes, we hope, not into our groundwater. Do we know that, though?
Well, we do have a monitoring process that's in place, and we require landfills to place monitoring wells around their landfill in the strata that is likely to be where a leak may occur. And those monitoring wells are checked for indicator parameters that might indicate contamination. And if we do see contamination, then we will ask for some corrective action to cut off the source and then also to manage the contamination plume, so to speak, to make sure that we're not impacting nearby private well sources or even municipal well sources.
How often did we see that contamination happening that you have to call into action something?
Well, in almost all cases of the line landfills, it's difficult for me to come across an unlined landfill that has not shown some contamination. One of the things, though, that I guess I was somewhat blessed with is that we have a lot of low permeability soils surrounding our landfills in most cases.
Low permeability means it's not penetrated very easily?
It's not penetrated very easily, and it doesn't travel very fast. In most cases, the water that may be leaking from the landfill may not travel more than 10 to 15 feet a year. So we have an opportunity to intercept that, manage that, and take care of that. Now, that's not necessarily the case in the rest of the nation, but and not necessarily the case in all Iowa landfills. There are some landfills that are placed in alluvial areas, diluvium areas, where the soils are much more sandy or gravelly, and so in those situations, contamination plume could move out a few hundred feet before we have got it under control. The other concern is landfills that might be placed above bedrock, where the bedrock may have some bedding planes or faults that can really move the contamination in a hurry.
Talking about the state of landfills in Iowa with Mike Smith, environmental engineer with the Iowa DNR. Going back to that curbside and what we leave at the curbside, what can you tell us are the nastiest things that get in there in terms of the contamination and trace that back? What are we putting in the trash that really is the most harmful stuff that those liners are trying to protect our groundwater from?
You know, that might be a difficult question for me to answer because it depends on your perspective and what is leaking from the landfill. Certainly, we did a waste characterization study back in 2011, and we showed that over 25% of the waste was organic waste. And the organics in there can produce a lot of gas, migrating gas. And migrating gas is a concern for two reasons. One is that there's a potential for explosions. And the other one is that that migrating gas is not all just methane. It can carry with it some other gases that will contaminate our groundwater. So that is one concern, is that the organics can produce a contaminant, in this case gas, that can cause us problems. The other part is that we do have in our waste stream about 0.2% is what we consider household hazardous materials. And those are things like your neighbor throwing away or you throwing away a jar of pesticide or something of that nature, and that can get into our leachate. I will say that we got to be kind of careful about thinking about how we did landfilling back in the 70s and the 60s and earlier, in that society has evolved and we're now using more and more materials that we may not consider to be somewhat less hazardous than what we are throwing away today. The advantage, though, is that almost all the counties provide a outlet for those household materials. For example, regional collection centers where you can take your old pesticides and have them safely take care of that material.
Let's talk a little bit about how trash gets carted around. You said that we've come to have fewer landfills here, 40-some active ones in Iowa. Describe how and why trash gets carted around, because Iowa, at the same time as exporting some of our trash, we also import, I think, much more than we export. Why is that going on?
Well, I'll answer your last question first. In the 1990s or so, we did take a lot of trash in from other states. And in particular, we took a lot of trash in from the metropolitan area of the Twin Cities, and on the order of, say, 20% of our waste stream, about 500,000 tons a year were coming from those communities up there. And right now, in the latest data that we have, we're taking in about 184,000 tons of waste from outside the state. We also export waste, too, though. We have about 76,000 tons last year going to other states. So most of that's being driven by economics, and where is it less expensive to landfill? The waste will try to find a way to that location.
Mm-hmm. So counties with few people and a lot of land.
Oh, that's probably a good mechanism for having waste come to that county. I will say it's very difficult, though, to site a new landfill.
Right. Talk a little bit about that, because that can be a very contentious issue. Perhaps some of our listeners listening know that it can be. When you try to create a landfill, you try to enlarge a landfill, it can cause a lot of problems. How is that becoming more and more contentious?
I'll just state by the saying that the last successful landfill siting was in 1992. And there's been efforts at least two other locations to try to site a landfill that were not successful. And the one that was successful in 1992 was in an industrial area, and it was next to an older landfill. Mm-hmm. So to some respects, not in my backyard, it's really going to be very difficult to site a new landfill anywhere, I believe, in Iowa. What's happening right now is that most operating landfills, if they want to stay in the game and be an operating landfill for years to come, are trying to purchase land adjacent to their existing landfill.
What can former landfills be used for? Are landfills that are operating now that will eventually be closed, or those 50 closed ones? What good is that land?
I doubt that there's much benefit except possibly taking hay off the top of the landfill. Or there may be some recreational opportunities. I know that at least a couple landfills in Iowa have put, for example, skeet shooting ranges on top of the landfill. The other uses, like grazing, are not allowed by our landfill rules. We're worried about misuse and damage to the cap that we put on the closed landfill to make sure that it's still intact, that we don't have exposed waste, and that we don't have a lot of rainfall soaking into that landfill because you have a cap that may be damaged.
So you close a landfill or a portion of a landfill, it's capped, and then what, soil is put over it, or? So that something grows on it. It looks like land.
Yeah, normally you put an impermeable layer on top also. And then on top of that impermeable layer, you try to place topsoil if it's available, or some medium that you can, so to speak, make into topsoil by adding compost or something of that nature to get a good stand of vegetation, because one of the things that you want to minimize is your maintenance cost of going out and repairing erosion or other problems at the landfill because you don't have a good vegetation stand.
Mm-hmm. I didn't ask you the simple question of how many tons go into our landfills.
Well, and right now our latest data ends in July 1 of 2013, so The new year data will be about 3 months in the making before we have that data. But we have approximately 2.3 6 million tons going into landfills in Iowa in the fiscal year ending June 30th of 2013.
What has been the impact of more and more recycling in communities? Has that decreased that tonnage, or is it steadily increasing?
You know, the legislature asked the DNR to set up a program to encourage waste recycling as one, waste reduction is another, or waste reuse is another, other things other than landfilling. And they started that process in 1988, where we looked at how much waste was going into landfills in 1988. And the latest data that we have is that we are now throwing away about 36% less than we did in 1988. Now, I will say that some of that is by definition. What we were throwing away before is sometimes used as by the landfill for in place of soil, where people put soil on at the end of the working day. They put soil on your waste that you placed just to control vermin and litter and odors.
Mm-hmm. What's the future of landfills? I lived in Europe for a while, and the idea of a landfill in some parts of Europe is just unknown because they say, how can you give valuable land, and Iowa has some of the most valuable land in the world, give valuable land over to trash and make it basically unusable?
You know, that's a good question that I like to flip that a little bit, not necessarily to you, that you've probably already studied up on this, but I ask people, the normal walks of life that aren't tuned into this, you know, do you know where your landfill is in your county? And many people don't even know that, which is kind of an indirect way of saying that we must not be running out of space. However, I did mention that it's very difficult to site a new landfill. And there is a move right now, it's kind of in many different fronts, to look at product stewardship, where materials need to go back to the manufacturer to put right back into their process instead of throwing things away. So there's an increasing pressure to try to not throw away materials that may have some value. The other aspect is that people are looking at waste to energy, and I think you were talking about that you're going to cover that in another subject,
yeah,
so I don't
want
to belabor that.
Right.
So there's more pressure to do waste to energy. And I will say that in areas of very high population, like density, like the Twin Cities up in Minneapolis-St. Paul, where they have two burn units, the cost of landfill is much more expensive up there because land is so valuable in that metro area. So it adds a little more incentive mm-hmm. to do a waste-to-energy type project, whereas land really is less expensive.
Yeah, you know. It sounds like when the economics are right, it will come to our area too. Mike Smith, environmental engineer with the Iowa DNR, thanks for giving us a picture of the landfill situation in Iowa.
You're welcome.
Coming up in just a moment, we will indeed talk about how we can benefit from energy created from our trash. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Also, we want to hear from you. We'll share some of these 5-word or less answers to how has your attitude toward trash changed. Go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. 5 words or less, how has your attitude toward trash changed? Back in just a few minutes. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. It was 25 years ago this month that the world's attention turned to Iowa when a crippled DC-10 with nearly 300 passengers crash-landed outside of Sioux City. Tomorrow on this program, remembering the last flight of United 232 with Lawrence Gonzalez, author of a new book on that catastrophe, which killed scores, also many who survived it. We'll be talking with two of the surviving flight attendants tomorrow on this program. Today, we're kicking off our summer environmental series by tracing our trash to its final resting places. Some of our landfills don't have liners. We learned that in the first half hour. Some of the closed ones, and they could be leaking into our groundwater. This hour, we want to talk about two different ways that waste can generate energy in just a moment. But also want to remind you that we're looking to hear from you this hour in five words or less how your attitude toward trash has changed over the years. Some of the answers that we have in an email, for instance, from Arland: recycle everything you can. From Kristen: lesser developed countries recycle more. And from Carol on our Facebook page: fired the rural garbage collector. Bet you there's a story behind that one, huh, Carol? Let's talk with Gary Friel now. Gary Friel is the superintendent of the Resource Recovery Plant in Ames. Gary, welcome to our program.
Well, good afternoon, Ben. Appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much for coming in. Tell us about this, because this is not known to most Iowans, I would assume. The Resource Recovery Plant in Ames, what goes on there?
Well, in 1975, close to 40 years ago, the city forefathers were looking ahead to conserve the fine agricultural land that we have in this state and develop this idea of taking the waste and turning it into energy as we currently do today.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, how does it work? If you can give us sort of a radio picture in our minds of what's going on there.
We have the largest single stream recycling program in the state of Iowa. So the garbage haulers, all private haulers, plus Iowa State University, bring their trash to the plant. It's unloaded there. Our in-loader operator pushes it into some large grinders. We pull out the ferrous metals, the non-ferrous metals, and goes past an air classifier system. The light fraction goes at a power plant to be combusted with coal, and we recover about 75% of everything that comes in our front door. The
recover, what does recover mean?
Means we divert it from the landfill.
Mm-hmm.
So we send about 25% of all the incoming waste to the landfill. We recover the rest of it.
Now, in Ames, are Ames residents separating? Their recycling goes somewhere else. This is what is left over?
No. Ames, that's what I was referring to as the single stream recycling. Ames residents can throw all their trash in one can. One truck comes to pick that up and delivers it to our facility, where we mechanically sort it with all of our equipment.
Okay, so you mechanically sort it, and then you grind it up, and then you use it to generate electricity. What's in there that's got high energy value?
All the paper, the cardboard, the plastics, small pieces of rubber, like the caller earlier was alluding to. He said that there's a fair amount of organics, but the organics, once they're dried up, we can get some fuel value out of those also.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all know rubber you mentioned, or plastic, we burn those things. They put off an awful toxic smoke. So how do you deal with that?
They sure can. At a lower furnace temperature or boiler temperature, they can cause a major problem. But if you get over about 1,800 degrees in the boiler, the dioxins and furans that you're probably referring to, because of the residence time in our boiler and the boiler temperature at about 3,000 degrees, our emission control systems can take care of everything.
Mm-hmm. Emission control systems, is that scrubbers comes to mind here. Is that something that we're talking about, something that cleans like smokestack?
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Okay, so you can scrub it, and how clean does it come out then?
I don't have the exact details. The power plant guys deal with that, but when we actually combust the garbage or the RDF, the refuse-derived fuel, with the coal, we can come up with a little bit cleaner emissions than when we burn directly with coal only.
And I understand that you burn not only Ames garbage, trash, but you have other communities that within Story County that deliver to you?
Yes. Most all of Story County's trash comes to the Resource Recovery Plant. We deal with rural Story County so that the garbage hauler that comes out, picks it up in the rural area, brings it there, along with most all the communities within Story County.
Do people in Story County have to pay more for getting rid of garbage than in other places in Iowa? How economical is this?
Quite a few years ago when the plant first opened up, it was a little bit more to bring the trash to the Resource Recovery Plant versus a landfill. With almost 40 years in operation now, we've been able to reduce our debt load, and our tonnage, our tipping fee, is right in the middle of the state average. It goes anywhere from $20 a ton to $100 a ton for tipping fees, and City of Ames is at $52.75 per ton now. So we're about the middle of the pack.
Once it gets burned, what do you have left over and where does that go?
It's sluiced out to the ash pond at the power plant, and then that gets dredged and it gets screened. Part of that will end up, the large fraction goes to a landfill, and then the smaller fraction, Iowa DNR has approved that for a beneficial reuse, so you can use that for a compacted fill on different projects.
So in Ames, if I'm drawing energy, lighting my lamp or my refrigerator, how much of the electricity there is coming from this trash?
It's about 10% of Ames electric comes from the refuse dry fuel.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned this started 40-some years ago. What was it? We know we had our first sort of energy crisis in the 1970s. Was that the spur?
It was part of energy independence, but farmland had a pretty good spike about that same time. And so to conserve those resources, that helped involve the conception of trying to not utilize that farm ground for the disposal of trash any longer.
Mm-hmm. How unique is this in Iowa? Are there other communities doing this?
In the state of Iowa, nobody else is doing it to this magnitude. There might be some small, not even commercial scale facilities up and running yet. We're the only one that's up and running at this scale. There's 84.
I'll just say, if it's such a good idea and you've had it around for decades, why aren't people copying you more?
It does cost quite a bit of money to get one up and operating. There's 84 in the entire United States.
Mm-hmm. And do you have people from around the country visiting this rather unique facility?
Yes, we have visitors from all over the world. The State Department, when they have overseas visitors come in, we're one of their stops the last probably about 3 years. They actually bring the visitors from all over.
I understand you also work with the electric utility in town. Tell me how that works.
Well, we're literally tied to the power plant. We've got a 14-inch underground tube that sends the waste after it's been processed at the resource recovery. We blow that pneumatically to a storage facility in the coal yard, and then the power plant draws this the refuse dry fuel out of the storage facility. It goes underneath the railroad tracks and is blown into the two boilers and co-fired with coal at that point. So we deal with the power plant directly on a regular basis.
I understand that there have been a couple studies that are looking at the future of the Ames Resource Recovery Plant and the Municipal Power Plant, which you just described you work with. What is the future there?
We're always trying to evolve, be as environmentally friendly as we can. And with the power plant, they have decided that the best scenario for them is to switch to natural gas, and we need to ensure throughput and reliability for the waste customers. So we're looking at a variable of options. We can co-fire the RDF with the gas at the power plant, or potentially we're looking at other options with thermal conversion, potentially gasification.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of terminology I didn't quite get there. So natural gas has dropped in price. We find because of fracking, we have such an abundance of it in this country, and that's changed the equation for you, you're saying.
Right. It looks like with environmental impact, the gas is going to burn a little bit cleaner than what the coal is. And if we can get the infrastructure in place and get the gas here at a reasonable price, and if it burns cleaner, then environmentally that's probably a good sound solution to move forward with.
Mm-hmm. And that puts you out of business there, burning trash.
Well, we believe we can co-fire the trash with the natural gas also.
Okay. Will that continue? I mean, we have a lot of natural gas, it seems. What is the future there for you at the resource recovery plant?
I think we've got long-term viability. We have got such tremendous community support for our type of a system. We're locally sustainable. We take care of our waste right here in our community. We don't have to pack it onto trucks and drive it all over and make that the greenhouse gas or carbon footprint even larger. By being a locally sustainable solution, we can handle things right here, I believe.
Gary Friel, superintendent of the Resource Recovery Plant in Ames, thank you for telling us a little bit about your unique plant that's been around for, what did you say, over four decades, huh?
We will have our 40th year celebration in August of next year.
Okay. Gary Friel, congratulations on that, and thanks for telling us about it.
Thank you.
Ripple Effects is the title of our Monday series here on River to River and also Talk of Iowa 10. We're exploring Iowa's environmental challenges. Trash is our topic this hour. We want to finish the hour with Craig Stewart Paul. Marion in eastern Iowa is a city that seems determined to keep itself on the map as a national leader in the effort to turn garbage into energy and other uses. Last year, the Marion City Council approved a deal with the waste-to-energy firm FiberRight LLC to create the Marion Waste Revitalization Facility. Craig Stewart Paul is the CEO of FiberRight, joining us by phone. Hello, Craig.
Good afternoon, Ben. Thank you for having me.
Good afternoon to you. What's being built in Marion? It's not operational yet. I understand that, but what are you working on?
Well, we're in the process of going through all the permitting, and within the last few days, we just closed on some land in Marion. So what we're building in Marion is a fully integrated resource recovery facility where we will be doing single-stream recycling and processing and screening of mixed waste, which we then ship to a plant we own in Blairstown, Iowa, which is also just finalizing its permits, where we actually use a biotech process, a wet process as opposed to burning, where we convert the organic materials into sugars and biogas. So as many people in Iowa know, once you get sugar, oftentimes from corn, it's very easy to ferment that into ethanol. So we will be producing what we call trashanol, so fuel ethanol made from the sugars we get from organic waste streams.
I went to your website and watched a short video that shows the separation process. It's quite impressive. Take us through that separation, because this is a single stream. And as we learned from the last conversation I had, and I don't know how much you heard of that. So the people in the community in Marion do not separate it or recycle. You take it all.
Well, it's a bit of both. So our view actually is that recycling is the best use for waste. And in fact, that's one of the reasons we're in Iowa, is that the state has a fairly advanced and forward-thinking policy towards waste handling. So for source-separated recyclables, in other words, if you put your newspapers out or your bottles and cans out, we will still recycle those in the traditional way because they're best served turning those back into raw materials. But your mixed waste, the things you just throw out in your trash can, so your food waste and even diapers, for example, that goes into a process where we mechanically screen and separate it and then go into a pulping process. The pulping process separates the organics from inorganics, so inorganics, things like plastics, and at the same time cleans them. So you'll notice in the video that the actual film plastics, the trash bags themselves, and other things that people just throw away, we can recover now as recyclable grades by removing what we call putrescibles, the organic material, which is nasty, smelly, and then sometimes dangerous to handle as well.
Mm-hmm. So the streams coming out are what?
So the streams coming out are recycled materials, clean paper, cardboard, cans, plastic bottles, and the like. They are sugars, so we take cellulose, the dirty cellulose, so think packaging materials, pizza boxes, and diapers, and using an enzymatic process, we convert that cellulose into sugars. So that stream is fuel ethanol. And then the food waste, one of the challenges for incineration with food waste is it's 60%+ water. Well, we have a fairly unique anaerobic digestion process we've developed over the years at our demonstration plant. That's where we shot the video. And we actually convert that food waste into digester gas. That digester gas is no different in composition from natural gas. And so what we're able to do in Blairstown is use that to power the entire plant. So the beauty we have here is that we have no net energy input to the plant. There's enough digester gas comes off food waste for us to power the whole process.
How unique is this in the state, in the country?
It is the first in the country. The demonstration plant that we built is the first of its time in the country, of its kind in the country.
The one in Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's based on organic recovery processes in Europe. As you can probably hear, although I've lived here 25 years originally from Europe.
I do, yeah.
And actually, I call it my Eastern Iowa accent. And so, yeah, it is the first of its kind. And we, as I said, we discovered a forward-thinking state in Iowa and a forward-thinking community in Marion, where Marion is really has a determination to go to zero waste. Now, zero waste is probably never going to happen. For example, we've yet to find something we can do with used cat litter. But technically, zero waste is anything less than 20%, more than 80% recovery to recyclables or composting or other types of materials.
Mm-hmm.
So Marion really wanted us to provide a better solution for their waste. We negotiated over time, and now we're getting ready to start construction of the two facilities.
And when will you be in operation?
Well, you know, God willing and the creek don't rise. So right now we are putting all the cash together, so most of that is done. Like I said, we hope for permits within the next 30 days. That should be all done. We actually have started construction in Blairstown. The steel for the building's all been delivered. And we would love to start construction this fall in Marion. We'd hope to do it sooner, but as with anything to do with waste, you need to be sure that your permits and everything is done properly. It just takes time, unfortunately.
So operation in sometime in 2015, am I hearing?
That absolutely is our goal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in the course of this, you're pioneering, you're trailblazing here. Mm-hmm. What are the biggest hurdles you've faced?
Well, a lot of it has been the unknown. I mean, handling waste, as Gary pointed out, is very, very difficult. And providing a reliable solution to the community must be first and foremost. So we've now got over 4,000 hours of experience at the demonstration plant, and just strange things come at you. I mean, the waste stream is very, very strange and changes, you know, day to day and hour to hour. So we've had to come up with multiple solutions for different things that may come. And no doubt, we're going to learn more. I mean, there's other things that will arrive at us. I mean, we've had dead coyotes, all sorts of things coming with the waste stream. You've got to find a way to deal with them.
Dead what?
Coyotes. We're in Virginia.
Okay. So you have to get those out of that stream.
Yeah, well, we pulp those, but that's another story. This conversation can rapidly go downhill. Again, we're talking about trash.
Okay. So when you were listening to Gary, so when we compare this to Ames, if people want to be reminded, what is the key difference?
The key difference here is that we're really not burning anything. We're using a wet process, a biotechnology process, and that probably is a differentiator in that the advances in biotech over the last 10 years have allowed us to get targeted organisms, and no real difference to anaerobic digestion. We're just able to focus them to deal with the organic nature of the waste stream. And waste is 50 to 60% by weight organics. That's the kind of stuff you throw out because it smells. It's difficult to deal with. So we are able to convert those materials into actual commodities, or, in this case, liquid transportation fuel, as opposed to heat and electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is far more valuable. And in doing so, we're not volatilizing anything. We're not creating the gases that you need to scrub. We're creating sugars and we're creating digester gas, which are chemically and on a molecular basis identical to natural gas and corn ethanol.
We've got less than a minute left, Craig. You said Iowa was a forward-looking state here, and that's why you selected Iowa for this unique program. You have such an international accent, a British accent. Where in the world should people feel best about their trash and where it goes and how it's handled?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think ask me that question next year, and I'm going to hopefully tell you Iowa. Because what we're doing actually is first of its kind in the world. Now, Europe is behind and with the way it handles its organics, but no one is really converting it into transportation fuel yet. And the U.S. government and the state have really encouraged that. So it could be that in Iowa we'll be the world leader in the way it handles its waste.
Okay. How cost-effective is this?
It costs us about 25% of the cost of an incinerator to build one of our plants. And we think we can recover in value something like $75 per ton of trash. So we think that economics must drive it. Otherwise, other plants won't get built.
Craig Stewart, Paul, CEO of Fiber Right. We will follow what you're doing there in Marion and see if that prediction comes true, that the residents of Marion will feel the best about what's happening with their trash in years to come.
Well, thank you very much, Ben.
Okay, Craig Stewart Paul. Also, this note to end our program from our listener, Peter. Hi, Ben. We do all we can to keep usable items out of the landfill. One resource we use a lot is Free Cycle, a nonprofit volunteer organization that provides a convenient way to give items away you no longer need to people who have a need. I think it is think of it as an online neighborhood swap, Peter writes. Today's post for Iowa City, where Peter seems to live, have people offering a stroller while another is seeking a crib mattress. The website, and this is not just for Iowa City, this is nationwide, www.freecycle.org. Freecycle.org. Peter says thanks for covering the topic. Peter, thanks for chipping in that piece of advice. And Ripple Effects continues next Monday on this program. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. John Pemble helped us out in Des Moines. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.